Well, whether you agree with Dr. Tim Ball or not, don't be shy. Make the call. You'll never be put down on this program because of your views or your opposing views. So we're going to be back with him. We'll take your calls. His book is called Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. And you're next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Dr. Tim Ball. We're talking about Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History, his book. Tim, why is this such a hot topic? And by that I mean people get upset no matter what side you're on, whether you think it's man-made or it's a cyclical cycle of the planet and the solar system. People really get ticked off. How come?
Well, I really can't answer that except to say that the weather's always been, like Mark Twain said, everybody talks about the weather but nobody does anything about it. And everybody talks about the weather and has very definitive views on it, but don't know what they're talking about. I really can't explain that. I think that one of the factors is, of course, the change. If you get the weather changing, we know from our own basic experience that if the weather patterns last more than, say, 6 or 8 weeks, people start to get very, very uncomfortable. So if you start and look, what's the traditional, Chicken Little? The sky is falling. So people start to form very definitive views on this, and stop listening to reason. And I like that comment you make in one of your promos about keep an open mind. And yet on some of these issues, people simply have very closed minds right from the start. Don't confuse me with facts. I've already made up my mind. I wish I could understand it better. And one of the things that I do know is that people like Al Gore, with his movie Inconvenient Truth, where he used Hollywood to produce that movie, it's a superb piece of propaganda. And propagandists know exactly how to exploit people's fears and to mislead them and misdirect them. And other than that, I really can't answer your question.
All right, let's take some calls here for you, Tim. We'll pick it up by going to Stella in Seattle, first-time caller for us. Hi, Stella.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
Hello. So I have a question, a part of the idea of a deception. Do you think it's a part of a gang of money or a control of the amount of people? Because if the people wake up, they wouldn't be able to stop that force.
Or all of the above, Timothy.
Yeah, well, it is obviously all of the above. I mean, one of the things that you see now is how they've roped the Pope in on this, and the Pope's going out and promoting the global warming and that whole agenda, and apparently not realizing that the whole purpose of it is population reduction. And, he's sort of been making some oblique comments to it. His most recent encyclical was the major advisors that he got for that was a fellow by the name of Hans Schellenhuber, who is the head of the East Germany, the Potsdam Climate Institute. And Schellenhuber is a pantheist who believes the world population should be less than 1 billion people. And yet here he is advising the Pope on global warming and climate change. The other person the Pope hired was Naomi Klein, who is an openly declared Marxist. And so you've got those objectives of controlling the people, reducing the number of people, and as I said earlier in the program, it really is all about power. And the big battle that's going on right now, Stella, is, as you see, with the American, what's going on in America, is how much government should you have? How much government control should there be? What should government be in control of, and what should be private industry? And people have no ideas about these questions anymore, and yet they're very central to things. What's interesting is that whether you call it communism, Marxism, socialism, liberalism, there's no difference in them other than the speed with which you want to take total control of people and the degree of that total control. And of course, what you see at the other end of it is the attack on America and Christianity. And the reason that that occurs is because both of them represent free will. Christianity is about free will. the church, Christianity is not telling you how to believe it, behave and saying you've got a choice. You can make a free will, and then you live by your choice. And America was built around that, the idea of free will. Both of those are very much under attack. And, of course, these kinds of global threats where they're saying, oh, you need a global government and you need us to protect you, is precisely the kind of vehicle that works for them.
And Tim, when you look at this, and it's been going on now for, as you say, 1988, probably even before that.
Yep.
Let's look at things like Kilauea in Hawaii. How many volcanoes are under the water that are heating up the currents, which contribute to all these problems?
Well, of course, this is part of the difficulty, is that the definition of climate change that these people were given at the IPCC said you only look at human causes of climate change. Well, you can't possibly determine how much human effect there is if you don't know how much effect or changes are natural. And volcanoes certainly are part of that, both above the surface, and there's about 10,000 active volcanoes around the world at any given time, but also underneath the surface, and there's equally that number. But it's not just the volcanoes under the surface, George. It's also that the crust of the Earth is the thinnest under the oceans, and also you've got the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is a great open crack in the Earth where volcanic heat is coming into the oceans, creating temperatures of 400 degrees Celsius in some of these volcanic vents. And yet nobody even considers geothermal heat as a factor in our assessment of heat energy and how it moves around and how it affects climate. So, yeah, you can pick any one of these factors. The other is, of course, that the volcanoes, when they erupt, they put particles up in the atmosphere that block the sunlight and cause cooling. So any one of these factors that we know very little about, but are natural causes of climate change.
We take texts and tweets. Tom, what do you have for Tim?
This one from Caroline in Wisconsin. Please ask Mr. Ball why it is that so many want to blame humans for global warming, and what do they have to gain by doing so?
That's a very, very good question, because one of the things when you start to look at the whole environmental movement, there is a very, very strong degree of anti-humanity in it. I always joked about this over the years because I said, you know, at the university, I'm familiar with this concept because my colleagues would say, if we could just get rid of all the students, this would be a great place to work. So you see this trying to get rid of people and the anti-humanity, and of course it all goes back to the idea that humans are not natural. And this is one of the great philosophical contradictions. It's why I did my honors thesis on this, about humans and their role in changing the face of the Earth. The people that are pushing the global warming issue will tell you, oh, yeah, Darwin's right. Well, if Darwin's right, then aren't we the most successful species on the planet? But then when you look at Darwin, Darwin was taken to task by a guy by the name of Alfred Russel Wallace, who said, look, if your theory of evolution does not include humans, then it's a waste of time. And so this is why, by the way, you see amongst the literature right now, Richard Dawkins, God is Dead, and all of this. This is all part of the same debate, and that humans are not natural, and therefore anything we do is not natural, and therefore we have to be got rid of completely or certainly reduced in number. So it's a very interesting part of the whole situation. And Russel Wallace, by the way, wrote to Darwin saying, look, even before Darwin published, he said, here's your evolutionary theory. But if you don't explain the huge difference between humans and even the other apes, then your theory is meaningless. And of course, when Darwin published The Origin of Species, he doesn't mention humans at all. And then when he published The Descent of Man later on, about 30 years later, or almost 30 years later on, he tries to claim that, there are different animal species that individually can do all of the things that humans can do. That, by the way, led to cartoons and jokes about how if you put 1,000 chimpanzees in front of typewriters, they sooner or later would type the works of Shakespeare. So all of the of this is in that, as I said, that anti-humanity, and humans are not supposed to be here. We're not part of the natural order.
Next up, let's go to Steve in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Bell. And hey, George. I have a question. First of all, I agree with everything Dr. Ball is saying. And I think the idea is to basically drive down the lifestyle of humans so that they can basically control us. But you had a guest on, I think it was you, a week or so ago, talking about geoengineering.
Yep.
He emphatically stated that all human activity warms the planet. And I was kind of skeptical about that, even though I've seen the chemtrail so thick, it's like a kid with a crayon whiting out the sky. But I want Dr. Ball's take on all those metallic salts that are going into the air.
Yeah, and of course, you see that as Goethe, the German philosopher, once said, the unnatural, that too is natural. See, because we're in your question, and I'm not pointing fingers or blaming you for this, but in your question, it's the idea that the contrails are because humans have produced them, they're unnatural. Well, they're not. And one of the things that when you start to investigate that whole chemtrail thing, what happened there was that people were complaining about global warming so much that the government said, well, let's experiment. We're trying to cool the earth down. So they started spraying this material into the atmosphere to block the sunlight and create global cooling. But the other factor is when you start to look at the actual data, most of the chemtrail increase was seen in the northwest of the United States. And if you look at what's happened over the last 40 years or so, the number of aircraft flying to Asia has increased enormously, and they all fly out over Alaska and the wet northwest coast. And, of course, the other thing is that for greater fuel efficiency, these aircraft are flying into the stratosphere. In other words, they're up above the layer where normal weather occurs, the troposphere. They're flying in the stratosphere so that the exhaust, particularly the water vapor they put out, is more readily visible and more easily forms ice crystals. And we know there's a type of cloud called noctilucent clouds, which is night-like clouds, that these types of clouds have increased in percentage, and virtually all of it is due to this, what's happening with the aircraft. As I said, when you start to examine anything, you see the problem. But just a final comment on the geoengineering.
Sure.
Back in the 70s and 40, the 70s, and the concern about global cooling, there were all sorts of ideas being proposed to stop the cooling. They were talking about putting huge reflectors up in space to direct sunlight into northern cities and make them warmer in the wintertime. They literally, the Soviets, as they were then, were proposing to build a dam across the Bering Straits to block the cold water coming out of the Arctic, which would warm up the North Pacific, which then would warm that whole latitude around and make the Soviet Union warmer. I mean, there were all of these crazy ideas. But the truth of the matter is, goes back to the anti-humanity and the God thing, because if you think there is no God, then you think you can replace God and behave as God, and I got to tell people, I tried it at home. It's a very difficult job, but also if you don't know what you're doing, you're more likely to cause more problems than you actually resolve. So geoengineering makes no sense whatsoever.
No, it really doesn't. Let's take another call or two, Tim. We'll take a break, then we'll come back with final calls for you. We've got Walt in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walter, go ahead.
Hi, George. Needless to say, great to be on with you once again, George.
Hey, Walt. Good to have you with us.
Dr. Ball, greetings from the land of Bobby Gunther Walsh.
Yes, good.
You're going to be interviewed by him tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, I understand.
Yes, that's, and that's 6 o'clock Pacific time, so I'm going to have to sleep fast.
Yeah, you're not going to get much sleep, that's for sure.
Well, I'm trying to eliminate it, reduce it, because of the big sleep's coming. Why waste time now?
Well, with all due respect, Doctor, I don't agree with you that Dr. Paul Ehrlich has been totally discredited. What we have to remember is that we don't fully understand the dynamic systems of the Earth, just as we strive to understand, you know, Mars and whatnot and these other planets. Doc, I think what we have to remember is that we are rapidly approaching a world population of 10 billion human beings and on this planet, and I think that common sense dictates that the world population cannot increase ad infinitum. I think that we are using the Earth as an experiment, and we are using ourselves as the human race as guinea pigs. So, with all due respect, I think that Dr. Ehrlich, if you go back and read the landmark population bomb 1968, he predicted these the strife we're having, you know, on our southern borders. I mean, Mexico City, there are 20 million people living in Mexico City, and they estimate that a quarter of the population down there are homeless. They're living out of cardboard boxes, Doctor. So I don't think that Paul Ehrlich has been totally discredited.
Well, that's a very good point. But first of all, there is no way the world is even close to overpopulated. Let me give you just one example where I'm living. I live in Canada, the second largest country in the world. We are at the same population as California. Okay, that's number one. Paul Ehrlich himself said the average population for the world is less than 4 people per square mile. The world is not overpopulated by any stretch of the imagination. We produce enough food every year to feed 26 billion people. The problems are we don't have the refrigeration and the storage systems and the delivery systems to get that food to people. 60% of all the food that's produced in developing countries never makes it to the table. So again, the overpopulation, it's simply not true. But the last most devastating comment about overpopulation: if you really want to reduce population, all you've got to do is look at something called the demographic transition. And this came out in the 60s, and what it showed was, as a nation becomes developed, the population starts to decline. And where Ehrlich was saying, oh yeah, Britain will be overpopulated, Italy and so on, the problem for a lot of these countries is they're not even replacing their population. America, amongst the the American population, without migration, would be declining.
Even China is changing its birth rate.
Exactly. And if you go to Italy, for example, if you have a third child, the government pays you for that. And Japan is the worst case because Japan does not allow immigration. Japan's one of the most racist nations on the planet. They won't allow anybody in. And as a result, there are about 1.3 children per family when you need 2.6 per family simply to maintain your
population. To maintain. Tim, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back with some final calls for you. Human-caused global warming, the biggest deception in history, by Dr. Tim Ball. Next hour, we're going to talk about the Mandela effect. And welcome back. Tim Ball with us, and we'll get to your calls as well, our final segment here. Tim, what would you say in your book, Human-Caused Global Warming, the Biggest Deception in History, would be the most compelling part of your argument?
I think the science part of it, the fact that most people don't know that CO2 as a so-called greenhouse gas, and there are only three ones in the atmosphere, water vapor, CO2, and methane. CO2 is only 4% of the total greenhouse gases, and water vapor is by far the biggest greenhouse gas. But the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change say that because humans don't add any water vapor to the atmosphere, or very little, they don't consider it. But a 2% change in water vapor more than equals any CO2 addition. And the other thing is that in every record we've got of any length or duration, including the ice cores from Antarctica, every record shows that the temperature changes before the CO2. But the assumption in the whole global warming deception is that an increase in CO2 will cause a temperature increase. It doesn't occur in any record. The only place in the world where I know that an increase in CO2 causes a temperature increase is in the computer models of the IPCC. And what they did was they said, how do you know that CO2 causes a temperature increase? Well, we increased the CO2 in our computer model, and the temperature went up. Well, of course, because you programmed the computer to do that. And proof of the failure of these computer models is every single prediction that they've made since 1990 has been wrong. And if your predictions are wrong, your science is wrong, period.
All right, back to the calls we go. Let us go to Gordon in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Gordon, go ahead.
George, Tim, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My own research, and I have a BS in biology and chemical science, and I was a valedictorian in computer for electronics. I was honors in Florida State and valedictorian in the electronic college. My own research indicates that that whenever you look in the ancient records, you kind of beat me to it. The temperature change occurred first, and it caused the CO2 change, or it was not the CO2 that caused the temperature change. And secondly, the temperature went up and down before man got onto the scene, and that supports my this hypothesis that this is not such a man-made thing. But that being said, I'm a conservative, but that being said, I wonder on two things. One, is it really possible that the human activity could, to some small extent, affect the global temperature, even though it sometimes goes down? The global temperature has sometimes been going down. And secondly, is it not true that contaminating the pollution with the seas and all the chemicals in the environment is much more of a threat than CO2, meaning that the liberals are right on that one, but they're probably not very close to right on the CO2. So I'm going to stay on the air. I'm not going to take Manzer off the air. Maybe you have a question for me.
Gordon, that's a very, very good question, and thanks for your comments. One of the problems is that virtually nobody reads the IPCC reports. You've not only read them, but done your own research and found out how wanting they are. A German meteorologist and physicist by the name of Klaus Eckhart Pulse, he said, 10 years ago, I simply parroted what the IPCC told us. One day, I started checking the facts and data. First, I started with a sense of doubt, but then I became outraged when I discovered that much of what the IPCC and the media were telling us was sheer nonsense and was not even supported by any scientific facts and measurements. To this day, I still feel shame that as a scientist, I made presentations of their science without first checking it. Gordon, that there are some areas where we know, and I've done research on this. For example, the cities are warmer than the surrounding countryside, and that's because of the building of the city and the heat escaping from the buildings, and also the heat from the people. So it's called the urban heat island effect. So there are evidences of where humans can alter the climate, but I don't see that as any different than the fact that bees control the temperature in their hive, or termites control the temperature in their mounds. Somehow that this is somewhere again abnormal. Humans do have an effect. You can't live on this planet without having some sort of effect. But the first argument is that it is natural. And we were talking earlier to Walt about anti-humanity. I got a quote here from the head of PETA, the animal group. Yep. She says, if you haven't given voluntary human extinction much thought before, the idea of a world with no people in it may seem strange. But if you give it a chance, I think you might agree that the extinction of Homo sapiens would mean survival for millions, if not billions, of Earth-dwelling species. Phasing out the human race will solve every problem on Earth, social and environmental. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And by the way, the whole environmental movement, Gordon, I would be very, very cautious. You talk about the oceans, and they talked about ocean acidification. The oceans are alkali. The idea that they're becoming acidic it is simply rubbish. When you look at the levels and the volumes, it's all part of the fake news argument. And one of the things and this is the problem I'm having with it, one of the things that started this whole environmental scare, we've already mentioned Paul Ehrlich, the other person is Rachel Carson. Now, she published a book called Silent Spring, in which she said that DDT was causing bird shells to get thin and was killing off people, and she managed to get DDT effectively banned. And I was on a radio program where somebody said, well, who's killed more people in history? And because she goes through Stalin, Hitler, and so on. They probably never killed anybody themselves. Well, Rachel Carson, by getting DDT banned, allowed malaria to carry on, and the estimates are that 120 million people have died because they have not used DDT to get rid of the mosquito in Africa. The eggshell turned out to be absolute rubbish. There was no justification for that at all. And when George says be very skeptical, I would say be hyper skeptical about everything. Don't believe anything you read until you start checking it out, and then be very, very careful. But all you got to do is look for words like it could or it might, and the conditional words, and that should trigger your concern right away.
Email in from a listener, Tim. Have you ever been a paid consultant to energy companies?
No, and I wish I was. In fact, I tried in the early days because I knew how phony the CO2 was, that I tried to get money from the oil companies and said, look, you're going to get exploited and put out of business by this phony science. They all turned me down. I didn't get a nickel. And then what they did was they turned around and they've given millions to Greenpeace and the Sierra Club and so on. And now they're angry because they paid off these appeasers. But as Churchill said, if you pay, if you try to deal with an appeaser, you just hope that the crocodile will eat you last. So what they're finding out now is that all this money they paid to these companies that or these groups that attack them, they're taking them to court. We see the court trials of Exxon and so on. So yeah, I tried to get money, but I never got a nickel. So that of course is another way of putting it out. Why is money from Sierra Club, Greenpeace, or government? Why does it come without strings, whereas money from any energy company comes with strings attached?
True.
In fact, I wouldn't invest in a client in an energy company that wasn't doing climate research, because their whole demand is based upon how the climate is going to change. But somehow all of this gets lost in the hysteria and of course the guilt by association. Oh well, you've sold your soul. And the final comment I'll make about this is it doesn't matter who pays you. If your science is wrong, that's the end of the story.
Let's go to Tom with a text and tweet.
One's a tweet from Tiga. Says, Tim, why do you think so many people deny climate change, and is it because the science behind it is not clear?
No, that's part of it, and of course the idea that climate change is relatively new. One of the things that I mentioned earlier in the program was Hubert Lamb, and he was trying to develop better forecasts, and he started looking at the historic record, and he couldn't believe how much the climate changes and how recently it changed. So the idea that the climate changes, in fact, it wasn't only about 120 years ago that we even became aware that there'd been huge ice ages. The fact that 20,000 years ago, almost two-thirds of North America was covered with an ice sheet larger in area than the current Antarctic ice sheet. That's part of the problem. The second part of the problem is that in the Western world especially, everybody's been educated under a system called uniformitarianism. This was a way of looking at the world that was adopted into science that said that the change is very gradual over long periods of time. And it was introduced by a guy by the name of Hutton and a fellow geologist by the name of Playfair. They were concerned that the church was and the public were going to reject Darwin's theory, because Darwin knew that change was occurring very rapidly just from his studies of finches, that within one or two generations, new species were occurring or new features were appearing. So they put out this idea of uniformitarianism, that change is very gradual over long periods of time. We now know that's not true, but if you think about it, for example, most people still think that the Earth's orbit around the sun doesn't change. But in fact, it goes from almost circular as it is now to a much greater ellipse as it was 20,000 years ago. That change is being caused by the planet Jupiter. But that's not in anybody's awareness. So I think the combination of all of those things means why people are having a hard time accepting the whole climate change issue.
Okay, next up, let us go to Dean in Idaho. Welcome to the show, Dean. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. What a hot potato. Thank you for this guest. I would make an observation that Earth Day, which most of your environmental programs take as a beginning, was celebrated worldwide as the 100th anniversary of V.I. Lenin's birth. And overnight, they estimate on 500 college campuses, suddenly the anti-Vietnam movement became the environmental movement. Interesting coincidence.
Good point.
Yeah, and one other thing, in the book, Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages, just read the last two pages. He says the environmental movement will be used to bring the Soviet Union and the United States together governmental-wise. In NOAA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration has said essentially that the warming of the Pacific has a lot more to do with expelling more water vapor to weather trends than anything man has to do, as well as the plankton releases. But your guest, hey, what a breath of fresh air.
He's a good man.
I hope the people of this country realize that the billions and billions of dollars that have been spent brainwashing their kids in academia on falsehood. Anyway, thanks for letting me in.
You got it. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, Dean, thank you for those comments. And just to fill it in, one of the things that happened with Darwin was used by the science community to defeat religion. And I'm not here to promote religion, but that was what happened. And if you went to universities, even in America or England, at Darwin's time, first of all, Darwin was a naturalist, not a scientist, because scientists didn't exist at that time. But there were only two faculties. There was the liberal arts, the humanities side of it, and then the natural sciences. After Darwin, of course, you've effectively removed God as the reason for humans being here. And so the academic community were challenged with, well, then the comment I made earlier about, well, why are humans here and why are we so different from all the other animals? And what emerged in the universities was the growth of what is now the largest faculties and the most dangerous ones, and that is the social sciences. I refer to them as human navel-gazing. And so what you see is the social sciences are simply academics trying to study humans and how they behave and control them, but none of that existed before Darwin. And so this is part of what's going on. And if I could, George, introduce another idea.
Sure, and I've got a minute left, Tim. Go ahead.
Okay, very quickly. What's happening at that time, of course, the American Revolution was going on. The final phase of the American Revolution is currently underway, and this is what's part of the whole conflict, because you had free speech, the Second Amendment to defend free speech, private ownership of land, which only exists in America. In Britain, one-third of the land is owned by five people, including Prince Charles. And of course, the one thing that you didn't have control of was access to information. Now with the internet, people have access to information, which of course is why the government with net neutrality is trying to control that. But that's the final phase of the American Revolution, is that people can bypass the mainstream media and get the information for themselves. And of course, it's why Trump has been so effective with his tweeting, and why the mainstream media are the ones fighting so actively to get him to stop tweeting.
All right, my friend Tim, thank you for being on the program. Good luck with the book, Human Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. Up next, the Mandela Effect and how your mind is playing tricks on you.